Imagine wanting to bring something new to the table, literally, and not having your friends and local community back you up. In the case of Justin Anthony, he wanted to introduce the nation to South African cuisine and didn't get the response he was hoping for.
So I'm opening a South African restaurant in 1998. There were like two sushi restaurants in Atlanta. People thought I was crazy. You know, the South African community literally thought most people, that there were bets going 3 to 6 months before we closed. And here we are, going to be on 20 years.
Also on this week's episode, we discuss the importance of learning your craft, sacrifice, and how to stay true to yourself. And now, episode 5 of Culturation.
Good evening, my fellow citizens.
Are you ready? The main event of the evening.
The ideas.
It's the word that you put in.
The ability.
Can you dig it?
The talent.
I'm gonna show you
how great I am.
Those who influence, the entertainer, the business leader, and the entrepreneur, they're all right here on Culturation. And now, your host, Justin Epstein.
Welcome to Culturation. I'm your host, Justin Epstein. On this week's episode, we have the culinary tastemaker, Justin Anthony. Justin is the founder and owner of South African hospitality group, True Story Brands. Born and raised in South Africa, Justin attended the University of South Africa, as well as London Business School, prior to relocating to the United States at age 23. A renowned soccer player, he hoped to continue his career as a professional athlete. However, due to an unfortunate knee injury, he was forced into early retirement and looked to another passion, the hospitality industry. In 1998, Justin opened the first South African restaurant in the U.S., 10 degrees south, alongside his parents Derek and Diane. Since then, True Story Brands has expanded their South African footprint with the addition of three additional concepts, Yebo Beach House, Cape Dutch, and Biltong Bar, each focusing on sharing the lifestyle and experience of South Africa. A recipient of numerous awards, Justin and True Story Brands continue to thrive and enter new ventures. With that being said, I'd like to welcome my good friend, the Royal Cousington, Cousy himself, Justin Anthony, to the show. Justin, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, brother.
So for those that may not be familiar with you, if you could just kind of give them a little bit about yourself, a little quick background of who you are and what you do.
So my name is Justin Anthony, born and raised in Johannesburg, South Africa. Been in Atlanta, Georgia now for about 21 years. I moved here beginning of 96, end of 95, somewhere around there. And used to be a professional soccer player. And that's what brought me to Atlanta back in 96 to play for a team called the Atlanta Ruckus, which later became the Atlanta Silverbacks. And turned pro in South Africa when I was about 17 years old. Played for a team called Jomo Cosmos, which, you know, that was an interesting time. Feels like a lifetime ago, but had a knee injury and ended up getting into the restaurant business. But I think we'll get into that a little bit later. But currently own True Story Brands, which encompasses four restaurants. 10 Degrees South, which was the very first South African restaurant in America. Cape Dutch, Yebo Beach House, and Biltong Bar, beef jerky and booze.
Perfect. So, you know, we'll kind of get into all that, talk about your journey from soccer to restaurants to just being, you know, somebody that's kind of innovated the South African cuisine and lifestyle. But let's kind of take it back to Johannesburg, right? So what was it like growing up there? Kind of want to find out how that defined you, kind of understand better, you know, what made you who you are today, because a lot of that influence obviously is translated throughout this journey and still to this day.
So. Yeah, no doubt. So I had a very, really good childhood. I was very, very blessed, very lucky. I'm an only child, great parents, and, you know, grew up in South Africa. It was a beautiful place to grow up, beautiful weather. You know, my first passion was soccer, and I was always going to be a professional soccer player from a young age, from, I think, from the age of 8 years older. You know, that was my goal and my dream, and that's all I worked towards my entire, you know, young life, if you will. And I just really disciplined myself into, you know, just that was what I was going to do. So I lived, ate and breathed soccer, and that was my life. You know, it was interesting because, you know, growing up in South Africa, you know, I grew up during apartheid. And, you know, as a young kid, you don't know what that means or what it is. But as I got older and, you know, when I turned pro as a soccer player, soccer is a predominantly, you know, black sport in South Africa. So when I was playing for Jomo Cosmos and some of these teams, I had to go train in the, what we call the townships, which is basically, you know, like the ghettos or the hood, and the poverty and the stuff that I saw. It was very interesting. People thought I was crazy going into these places to train and I was going to get killed and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, it was very interesting to see. And, you know, it was interesting because when I was playing and growing up, I always thought that I would end up in Europe. Had a dream of coming to America, but I always thought I'd end up playing in Europe, which I ultimately did. But I never thought I would end up living in South Africa, and I couldn't wait to get out. And, you know, it's interesting because when I did get out, now as a South African restaurateur, if you want to call it that, because my restaurants are South African based, I've gone back to my roots of South Africa, and it's kind of instilled in me, and it's who I am.
So growing up in Johannesburg, right, you were going into these areas, you know, you hear stories of how rough it is in certain areas. Were there experiences that happened when you were growing up being in a place that was divided that, you know, were a little scary at points, or, you know, situations that you were in that you had to overcome that both during that time were a little crazy to know, you know, how you were going to kind of maneuver or get out? Because I've heard some stories from you in the past. I know it's definitely an eclectic upbringing, but also how do you feel those translated into some of these successes that you've had, right? Did it toughen you? Did it mentally prepare you a different way? Do you feel like growing up in an environment during that time, like Johannesburg, kind of instilled a lot of good traits in you that led to your successes?
Yeah, so I think one thing for sure is that it made me street smart. You know, always be aware of your surroundings. And it's interesting because I think that helps in business as well, to always be aware of your surroundings and to know, you know, risk and reward, if you will. But definitely made me street smart. There were definitely a lot of situations, you know, that were dangerous, if you will. But overall, you know, I didn't feel that much danger as I did, you know, love, in terms of, you know, because I was a soccer player and because, you know, I was going in there. It wasn't something that, you know, like people thought, and they had this preconception, you know, that you're going to get killed if you go in there. It wasn't like that at all. And I met so many great friends and people I'm still friends with today that, you know, I probably would never have got to know or get to, you know, become friends with over those years. But, you know, soccer was an interesting thing for me because it allowed me to travel the world and see a lot of things and meet a lot of great people that I still am, you know, in touch with today. But it was an interesting time in South Africa, and, you know, I didn't believe and I didn't stand for, you know, that government, and I hated that government that was in power. And I just, you know, I was fortunate enough that I wasn't part of it as a victim, if you will, but I saw inequalities that, you know, kind of set a stage for, you know, doing what's right, if you will.
Gotcha. So growing up down there, soccer was kind of everything for you. It's kind of what dictated your lifestyle, where you wanted to go with it. During that time, was food part of the life at that point? Were you taking an interest in food at all? Was it something you were just eating more as fuel at that point and just enjoying great meals? Was there any inclination during this time, like, oh, maybe down the road, you know, I may get into this space?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I can remember going back as a kid. I've always been really passionate about food. Really, really passionate. I never used to drink back in those days because I was a soccer player. So, like, alcohol was never a part of my life, even up until, I don't know, age of 30, if you will. But I remember going back, you know, we used to go every Saturday night. We used to go to a restaurant, and it was like the highlight of my, like, I couldn't wait for Saturday night to go to the local steakhouse. My grandmother, you know, when I used to stay with her, you know, she used to take me to these fancy restaurants. It would used to be just the two of us when she was babysitting me, and like she'd take me to like a fancy Chinese restaurant, or she'd take me. And I was always kind of, I always had a palate, if you will. Like as a kid, I was eating, you know, prawns, you know, shrimp, mussels, and like all these crazy things as a kid. And I was really like, really, I mean, I really like food. I mean, I still do, man. I really like food a lot.
All right, so there was something, at least from an early age, where you did have an appreciation for the food, maybe not knowing you were going to go in that direction.
No. I mean, I would never in a million years have said that I would be going to the restaurant business. But it's interesting because my family was always kind of in like the nightclub or, you know, as a kid, my parents, I mean, literally when I was a newborn, my parents were young and then, and like they used to, you know, their friends and family members had nightclubs and stuff. And they used to take me like in like this little carry thing as a kid and leave me with the host at the club. And like, so I guess it's always been in me. But yeah, if anybody had asked me if I'd be a part of it, there's no way in hell that I would have said that I was going to be a restaurateur.
What about, so for those that may not know, and we'll get into this a little later, your mom and dad were involved in the first South African restaurant brought to the U.S., which is 10 Degrees. But were they even cooking at that time? Was it a passion for them at that point or really?
I mean, my mom's cooked her whole life. She learned how to cook from my father's grandmother, so my great-grandmother, passed down a lot of recipes, and she's always cooked. And like, so our house back in South Africa used to come there on a Thursday, Friday, and literally people would stay there the entire weekend, sleep over, hang out, and people would come and go, and it was just the place to be. And my parents would cook and grill out, or what we call a braai, you know, which is cooking around an open flame. And, you know, we would literally cook and grill out every single weekend, all weekend, and people would come and just party at the house. And so I kind of grew up around that environment. And when we opened 10 Degrees South, I brought, you know, my parents were going to come over to the country. I'd been here for 3 or 4 years and kind of, you know, came to, I'm an only child, and it came to a situation where they were like, are you going to move back to South Africa? And I was like, look, I think I want to open the South African restaurant. When I was playing in England, I used to go to this South African pub, which used to get me through some, you know, homesick times. And there were a lot of South Africans moving to Atlanta back in the late 90s. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to open up a South African pub. Didn't know anything about the restaurant business. So I literally went and started waiting tables at a local French restaurant. And the owner, who was a great chef and a great restaurateur, his name is Jacques Hotel, he basically, you know, taught me the business and kind of, you know, I was waiting table. I went from being a professional soccer player to waiting tables. And everyone in South Africa and all my friends thought I was mad in the head and couldn't believe that I was doing that because it just wasn't who I was. And I had a mission, though. I had a goal that I was going to open up this place. And while I was waiting tables and I managed the restaurant for a bit, I was learning the business and I was looking for a space. And then I brought my parents over and, you know, the rest is history, if you will. You know, we turned 19 years old
two days ago. Yeah, that's right. Wow, so next year is 20 years.
Next year is 20 years.
So let's jump back to the sports aspect a little bit, because it seems like soccer kind of instilled a lot of business ethics in a way that translated over into how you think in business, right? And what's interesting is the last few people we've interviewed have all played sports and acknowledged how sports have kind of played a role in their success, mentally how it made them think from a training standpoint, from an endurance standpoint. So from the soccer standpoint, did you play at in college or university in South Africa? Did you go right into a league? How did you transition in that regard?
So it works a little different in South Africa. In South Africa, you play, so at in high school, back when I was growing up, soccer was not a part of high school. You played rugby. So I played rugby and I ran track. And then soccer, you played as a club sport. So I played for a club, and then depending on how good you were, you know, what club you played for, and then you kind of progressed from there. It's different from the States where you can, if you play college, you can't play pro. In South Africa, I still went to university. So I went to the University of South Africa and I got just a general degree in psychology was my major.
Was there any premise behind it? No, you were like, I'm just going to get a psychology degree because soccer is my goal.
I had a knee injury and I had surgery and I had to take the season off, if you will. And like, literally my mom was like, I mean, you can't just sit around the house and do nothing. What are you going to do? Like, why don't you like enroll? And I'd got a college, I graduated for college, if you will, from high school. So I took a year off and I just kind of did nothing and try to heal my leg and stuff like that. And then I was like, you know what, I'll enroll in college. And in South Africa, you could do that because we used to train at night. So I'd go to college during the day, university, and then I would play soccer at night. So I just got a general degree, but my thought process behind it was, after soccer, I was going to be a sports agent or a sports psychologist. The thing in South Africa at the time, it wasn't like the States. if you wanted to become a psychologist, a sports psychologist, you had to become a clinical psychologist first. So when I graduated college and I started like doing honors, the honors program, you have to be like do a PhD. You have to go see, like, we had to go visit like guys in jails and like serious people with like some serious mental issues. Wow. And I was like, nah, not for me. I just want to help a guy with his free kick or with his golf swing. I'm not getting into all that. So I left that and I went and I got a diploma, if you will, in business management.
Okay.
Which was from the London Business School. And I did that for a year, which involved marketing and sports and business and a whole thing like that. And I did that. And then my soccer career took off. So I put everything on the back burner and I went back to playing soccer, you know. The university thing was just kind of a backdrop, if you will. But it's interesting because the psychology degree, you know, a lot of people do economics in that, but psychology has helped me in my business because dealing with a lot of different personalities, it's really helped me look at things differently. So it wasn't the plan, but it just happened that way.
Is that the first time that you actually thought about it and said, you know what, now that I look back on it, like the psychology, the business degree actually is perfect for what I'm doing now? It was almost like...
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't planned. I mean, literally, like when I look back now, I'm like, well, you know, for the restaurant business, that's probably the best two things you could do, you know, in terms of the dealing with staff members, patrons, customers. I mean, you know, those two things, business and psychology, are probably the two biggest aspects of what we do.
True. So your soccer career takes off. Kind of what's the next step there?
Soccer career takes off. You know, I'd made the South African national under 16 team and ended up getting an offer to go to England on a tryout with this team called Ipswich Town. Went there, wanted to kill myself. It was the worst experience. I mean, it was freezing cold. Came from South Africa, you know, it's the reverse of the US, so it's summer there in December, January, and I went from summer in South Africa to the dead of winter in England.
Sounds
and
horrible.
Rain and mud, and it was just miserable. And I was staying in what they call digs, you know, where these guys from all over England that play for the team, you know, stay. They put up in these digs, if you will, these accommodations. And these guys were from the north of England, what we call Geordies, and I couldn't understand a word they were saying. They couldn't understand me, and it was just a crazy, crazy time. Like, I remember thinking if a plane landed right outside this door, I would jump on that plane so fast and be home. And I remember calling my parents. I was young, man. I was like 16. I was calling my parents. My parents literally put me on a plane at 16, and I landed. The bags were bigger than me.
Yeah.
Literally. I mean, like, and I landed in Heathrow Airport, and I had to catch the tube and then a train to Ipswich. And I was 16.
You grew up fast.
I called my father. He's like, man, stick it out. Like, just stick it out, stick it out. And that's the first time I got my knee injury. I'll be honest, I've never been so happy to have a knee injury. I was like, so I had to end up going back to South Africa, having surgery, and then ended up getting signed pro in South Africa, and then ended up getting another opportunity to go back to England. I was a little older, a little more mature, went back to England and, you know, played for a bit, and then got an opportunity. There was a gentleman that had a contact here with the Atlanta Ruckus. And a friend of mine had moved here from South Africa via LA. And I said, you know what? Let me go check out America for 6 months and go play and see what happens. So that's what I did. And I landed here and I was director of the camps, the summer camps. And it was, you know, it was fun. It was great. And then the Olympics came to Atlanta and my knee was still bothering me. And I was like, hey, you know what? I'll stick around here. There's some opportunity. And so I stuck around and I was just biding my time. And then the new season came around and I just ended up falling in love with Atlanta and I just never left.
So two things that I find interesting, right? First thing is the fact that you made it as far as you did in soccer, right? But you said when we first started this conversation, all you wanted to do was soccer. Do you feel, it's kind of a two-part question. One, if more people actually put everything into a passion that they had, that they would be successful? Because a lot of people say, I try, 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 but are they really locked in like you were? And two, in the same context, how many people you think stay in something longer than they should? Because it sounds like at this point, soccer for you was kind of, it wasn't passion anymore. It was just, you were doing it to do it. You know, do you feel like you got out, you waited too long, it was the right time, you should have done it sooner?
So for me personally, I got out at the right time. I'll never forget. I looked in the mirror. I remember looking at myself. All my friends were signing big contracts in Europe. Guys I played with, guys that sat on the bench for me. And I remember looking in the mirror and I remember saying to myself, look, you can carry on playing. You can go play back in South Africa, maybe Portugal, Turkey, Japan. All these countries were coming up. Stay in the States. And I was like, I saw some guys that were coming to the end of their careers. Guys' careers at that time were coming to an end, like 28, 29 years old. And I saw these guys were becoming soccer coaches and they didn't know what they wanted to do and they made a little bit of money. And I was like, I don't want to be that guy. Like, if I'm not playing at the best level, I don't want to play at all. And it was a passion. My goal was to be a professional soccer player. I'll never forget the day I signed pro. I scored a goal on my debut, the winning goal, which was crazy. It ended up getting my coach, who was my coach as a kid from the age of 7 years old, you know, his name was Eddie Lewis, and he played for Manchester United, and he was an English guy, and he coached me from a young age. And I ended up playing against him, and I scored on my debut. They got relegated. He got fired. And he calls me, and he's like, man, I coached you too well. Like, I literally just lost my job. And it was like a weird situation. Wow. And I was like, but I remember vividly, I scored the goal. I've turned pro. And I was like, okay, I've achieved the goal. Now what? Like, what's the next goal? And like, you know, the next goal was to make the South African team or play, you know, for Manchester United, for example. I'm a Tottenham Hotspur fan, so I'm in Tottenham Hotspur. But to play at that level. But I realized that my knee wasn't going to allow me to play at that level. So I looked in the mirror and I was like, I think it's time. And I never kicked a soccer ball for 2 years. And then we started, 10 Degrees started like a little, you know, recreational team. And then we ended up becoming a really serious team and became a semi-pro team. And I played for a number of years here, you know, for fun afterwards. But, you know, soccer stopped becoming fun, to your point, you know. And I had the passion and then I lost the passion. And, you know, the next thing I did was, okay, so business became my passion. So what I did was business became sport for me, literally. I took all the discipline, I took everything that I did from a soccer point of view, and I applied it to business. So I just, you know, as hard as I worked on my craft as a soccer player, I started working on my craft as a restaurateur and on business and just learning from whoever I could and soaking it up and learning from, you know, the Jacques Hotels, you know, the Vic Brandstetters. Vic Brandstetter, you know, is one of the original owners and founders of Houston's restaurant group, Heelstone. You know, one of the most successful privately held restaurant groups in the world. And I was very fortunate enough to meet him when I was dating my wife now, who's my wife now, but I was dating her at the time, and I was fortunate enough to meet Vic, and he's a great guy. And, you know, I just absorbed as much knowledge as I could. And like, you know, whenever I could be around Vic and ask him questions, I would, and I still do. And, you know, so I think, you know, that became my passion.
So for people that are looking to get into the restaurant hospitality space, right, Vic for you seems like he was definitely a big inspiration to this day, like you said.
Yeah, well, I was already in it when I met Vic. I'd already opened 10 Degrees
South. But did
he
make you think differently?
Completely. I mean, he definitely made me think differently.
So do you think people that are looking to get in, you know, they say, we hear it all the time, I'm going to start a restaurant, I want to do this, I want to do that, but they don't talk to people, they might not have the knowledge, they think it's easy. We all know it's one of the hardest businesses to be in. How important is it to have that mentor entering into this space? Do you need a mentor? Do you need to do what you did and wait tables and do line cooking and really understand it?
So I have a theory about this. I think that you need to start at the bottom. I think in anything that you do in life, you need to learn the craft. So, you know, it's like being a soccer player. I didn't start in the A team. I didn't start as a pro. I started as, you know, whatever, the fifth string team when I was 8 years old. And I worked my way up, but I learned the craft. And I started as a waiter, you know, waiter, busboy, learned it, ended up becoming a manager, and I learned the business. Being from South Africa, I'd never been in business in South Africa. I was a soccer player. So, I mean, I didn't know about business here. And I learned the business, and I learned how it works and how distributors work and how alcohol and licenses. And I learned the business so that I knew what I was getting into and that I had a perspective from every single thing, from the kitchen to a busboy to a waiter, so I could relate and I could understand what it was. I think a lot of people that get into business, whether it be restaurant or anything, they, you know, TV's made this a little difficult, like the top chefs of the world and all these shows, they see it and they look at these guys and they're like, I want to be that guy. I'm a great chef. I want to be that guy. Well, I'm a great, you know, I can do that. What they don't realize is those people that they're watching on TV have been doing it for many, many years. They started at the bottom. Now they might be famous, yeah, but they didn't start being famous. You got to pay your dues, man.
So when you started 10 Degrees, how did you just decide, I'm going to start this restaurant? Did you save up money? You know, where did this concept come from? Did you visualize it? And I say that because I know you're a big person that's spiritual. And one of the biggest things you hear with a lot of successful entrepreneurs is meditation, visualization, seeing it, actually believing you're going to get there. This is something that you visualize, because you said you put your head down. This is what you were going to do. Still to this day, is that something that you look at as a mindset?
Yeah, so everyone thought I was crazy. It was 1998.
Because, yeah, let's speak. South African restaurants and cuisines at this point did not exist.
Look, we're in 2017. And probably people that are going to listen to this, they're going to be like, what the hell is South African food?
Yeah.
You know? So I'm opening a South African restaurant in 1998. There were like two sushi restaurants in Atlanta. They didn't eat, like, the thing was, we don't eat raw fish in Atlanta. I mean, like, it was like a one horse town, literally. I mean, they didn't, like, I'm opening a South African restaurant and people are like, what are you going to be serving? Like, and you know, South Africa's got some crazy names for some of this stuff. Like, we have monkey gland sauce. People literally think that's like monkey's glands. And we're like, no, man, it's just like a tangy barbecue sauce. So like we had to like be smart about it, but people thought I was crazy. You know, the South African community literally thought, most people, there were bets going 3 to 6 months before we closed. And here we are going on, you know, going to be on 20 years next year. So people thought I was crazy, but I knew deep down inside what I had to achieve and what it was going to take. And it took a lot of hard work, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. It was not an easy thing. I never left, you know, the perimeter, literally, of Atlanta. Like, I never left the 3 mile radius for, I don't know, 7 years. My wife had to go to functions. We were dating. I mean, you know, literally for the first 5 years of our marriage, I mean, I didn't make weddings and stuff like that. I mean, I was the bartender at 10 Degrees South when we first opened for many years. You know, I was slinging drinks and working, you know, 16, 18-hour days for many, many years. You know, the success I have now, people, it's easy to look back and say, oh, you know, but the truth is I'm a 20-year overnight success. I mean, it's taken that long to be able to be where I'm at, and I'm still not even close to where I want to be at, in all honesty. But, I bartended. People don't realize that, you know. Like I say, they see these guys on TV and they see people and they think, well, I want to do that. I can do that. Doesn't work like that. You've got to pay your dues before you can be there.
Yeah. So that's, I'm happy you say that. That's one thing I always stress to everybody. They think, they see it now. And I think social media is a big problem with this.
For sure.
Because people see it and everybody thinks they're doing it.
Everyone.
And it's setting false expectations.
I'm seeing it all over social media. I'm literally looking and I'm looking at some of these people posting things and they're actually believing their own bullshit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what have you done?
They're doing a disservice to themselves.
What are you doing? Like, you haven't done anything. You haven't achieved anything. How are you going to make money? And at the end of the day, that's what it's about, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Vic Branstetter taught me this. He said, he taught me two things. Number one was consistency. He said, be consistently good or be consistently bad, but make sure you're consistent.
Hence, I just want to give a personal shout out to Houston's best veggie burger, consistent every time. Yeah. Every time. I mean, you know you're going to get a great meal.
I mean, everything, it's the most consistent product. He taught me that, be consistent. So like the chicken curry at 10 Degrees South
every time
that you had in 1998 is the exact same chicken curry you are having in 2017. He taught me consistency. He also taught me that it's not always about the money. And what I mean by that is when he first told me that, I was like, what are you talking about? It's not always about, of course it's about the money. And he was like, no, it's not always about the money. It's about standards and you know, where you set your goals. So for example, you know, let's say that they had a restaurant that was doing, I don't know, let's say $8 million. That's a lot of money for a restaurant. And they closed the restaurant down because in their standards, they had to do $10 million plus, for example, or that's what they expected. Even though they were making money, they closed the restaurant. And it wasn't about the money. It was about setting standards and values and keeping to those standards and values. So two very important things that I took away.
So when you started 10 Degrees and now obviously these other concepts that are evolving, how important was it for you to bring the South African influence and culture to America? Was it something that was very passionate to you to make people understand and to take pride and respect for the cuisine? And for those that don't know, how would you describe it? Because most people have no idea what South African food is.
So South Africa, let's start with what it is. South African cuisine, there's 11 official languages in South Africa. there's people from all over the world, literally, that live in South Africa. I grew up in a neighborhood with so many different nationalities and was friends with people from so many different nationalities. But it's essentially, you have Portuguese, French, Dutch, Malaysian, Indian, Mediterranean. You got all these things going on. So, I mean, you can get anything from like mussels in white wine and garlic to a curry to a great steak. There's so much going on. You know, there's a huge Indian population in South Africa. You've got the Cape Malay dishes, which has the Malaysian influence. I mean, just a lot going on. And it's very flavorful, nothing bland. And like I said earlier, when I was living in London, it got me through some home. Not only me, there was a lot of people in London at that time, South Africans, who used to go and hang out at this bar, and it got them through a lot of, you know, homesick times, if you will. There were so many South Africans moving to Atlanta back in the late 90s. And I kind of wanted to do, I didn't say, I'm going to open a South African restaurant and I'm going to become a millionaire. That was, it never, money never crossed my mind in terms of like, I'm going to make a killing at this. I literally wanted to create a place for myself, my family, friends, and these South Africans, a place for them to gather and, you know, and call home away from home, if you will. And then it kind of developed into, you know, I'm very passionate about South Africa. I'm very passionate about its people. I'm very passionate about its food and wine. And people don't realize, you know, the wine industry in South Africa dates back over 300 years, dates back to the 16, 1700s. Some of the most beautiful wineries and beautiful wine in the world. And it became my mission to get this message out. Like, this is a beautiful country with phenomenal food and phenomenal wines. And people need to know about this. Like, they really need to know. And I was, as we started becoming more popular as a restaurant, everyone's, oh, you should be in LA, you should be in New York. But you know what? At the end of the day, I think Atlanta was the perfect place for us, because Atlanta, we created a little community in our neighborhood, and we kind of became a neighborhood bar, if you will, like a Cheers, if you will. And people that had gone to South Africa or were going to South Africa, it kind of like would come in, and it just became a place, you know, that 20 years later, I mean, it's just crazy to think how many people have worked for us, how many people got married at the restaurant, met at the restaurant, kids. I mean, like, it's just a lot of things that have happened.
You're like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, exactly.
In Atlanta. It's crazy. You know, it's funny too. You keep on saying, talking about home and community. Earlier on when we were talking, you spoke about your home growing up was the place that everybody came. It was a sense of community, a sense of home. Do you feel like that naturally has kind of become what your establishments represent organically just because of how you were raised and what you were around?
I think so. You know, me, my mom, and my dad started 10 degrees south. And to this day, it's the three of us that have, you know, that own this restaurant. And, you know, my mom's still the executive chef. She's in that kitchen every single day doing, you know, the traditional dishes, doing her Daz de la, her famous Daz de la dessert.
Best dessert in the country.
And so, thank you.
Shout out to Di.
And so it was a family, it became our house, if you will. Like, we entertained like we would have in our house. And, you know, I think the community, you know, really appreciated that. And in the first 6 months, our clientele was 99% South African, and they started bringing their American friends. And then today, our clientele is 99.9% American. You know, we don't see that many South Africans. You know, we'd love to see more of them. But, you know, in all honesty, you know, that's a good thing. That's the message we're trying to get out, you know, is that. And over the years, you know, I've opened up different kinds of restaurants, a pizza place and a sports bar. And the one thing I always find myself passionate about, and the one thing that we've been successful at, is getting out South African cuisine in different ways, because there's so much to offer, and we've only just scratching the surface. There's still so much to you know, that we can do with this.
So why do you think people have resonated with the South African cuisine and your restaurants? Because we can touch on this. You have a lot of people that come here locally that eat here as regulars, a lot of business travelers, but more importantly, celebrities seem to really take a liking to your restaurant as well, and pretty influential folks. What do you think it is about the restaurants that makes these people keep on coming back?
I think, you know, there's a few things. First of all, it's the hospitality. I think that we create experiences. So as opposed to just serving good food or good service, I think it's an experience when you come to one of our restaurants, and you literally leave feeling like, oh, that didn't feel like Atlanta, or that felt really different, or that felt really, you know, cool. I think that we create environments. You know, I'm very fortunate that my wife, Kelly, is a great interior designer, probably one of the best in the world, in my opinion. And she's done so many phenomenal jobs, but I'm very fortunate. You know, she doesn't do other restaurants, but she does my restaurants. And for me, you know, it's a big plus. We call her QC, quality control. But, you know, she creates these environments. You know, I'll come up with a concept and she'll kind of understand what I want or what I'm looking for. And then, you know, on our last trip to South Africa, which was about 2.5 years ago, we came back and opened up 3 restaurants within 6 months. Just like creative juices flowing. And she just understood the environment that I was trying to create. And then we get the chefs and the cooks and, you know, we create the menus and the team. And it's very much a team thing. Like the restaurant, but any business, but especially the restaurant business, it takes a village. It's not about one person or one thing. It's definitely about the team. It's about literally from the dishwasher to the bartenders to the chefs, everybody plays a part in that experience. It's not a one pony show. And we've been very fortunate over the years. You know, I think that, you know, I don't know why the celebrities, you know, I don't know the exact answer, but I think we create comfortable environments. We create an environment where they feel safe, you know, to be there, and they're not going to get bothered. And 10 degrees South for many, many years was the kind of place, if you know about it, you know. It was like, if you know, you know. But we've never advertised the day in our lives. We've never been out there. And still to this day, it's kind of like one of those hidden gems. It's on the main road in Atlanta. And still to this day, weekly, people say, oh, yeah, I've been driving past that place. You've been open for like 10 years, right? You've been open for 5 years. And like 20 years. And like people still to this day haven't dropped in because they don't know what it is. And then they come. But that's good because the expectations are lower. And when they come in, they're like, wow, this place is really cool.
So most restaurants or businesses in general, right? And I mean, look, I have a PR creative agency. So to me, marketing is extremely important. But in your case, you did marketing in an unorthodox way, which is really more, if you know, you know. You were strategic, food first, which led to the talk. You've never really advertised per se. So is your marketing in a sense almost kind of being the behind the scenes place that is kind of the cool factor because it's not promoted in a typical business way?
Yeah. I have to work harder than most restaurateurs in the city because I'm putting out a product that people are not familiar with.
So the education.
So it goes back to the thing about it's not always about the money. I could very easily open up a taqueria, a pizza joint, serve great food, make it cool, make it hip, and I'd probably kill it. I'd probably make a lot of money. But that's not what I'm about. I want to do something different. I want to stand out. I want to do something niche. And I think that anybody that wants to get into the restaurant business or any business, you need to ask yourself what is going to be that difference. Like what's going to make you stand out from the crowd? And for us, we're fortunate that's what makes us stand out from the crowd because people don't know. You know, they're still discovering South Africa and they're still, you know, learning about this cuisine. I literally invented this. There was no such thing as South African cuisine. Even in South Africa, there was no... When I started 10 Degrees South, you couldn't go to South Africa and go to a South African restaurant. They would have laughed at you. They would have said, what's a South African restaurant? There's an Italian restaurant. There's a Portuguese restaurant. There's a Greek restaurant. There's all these restaurants in South Africa, but there was no such thing as a South African restaurant. Today there is, but back in 1998, I think we were the first South African restaurant in the world, never mind the country. That didn't exist. We literally took the best of every single culture and made a menu. So we took Cape Malay, we took Indian, we took Mediterranean, we took the French, we took the Portuguese, and we put the highlights in and made and created South African cuisine, if you will.
So what would you say to somebody that is trying to be an innovator like yourself, right? And I know that's a big term, but in reality, you're an innovator. You know, you took a space and a cuisine that did not exist and brought it to the world. And now you're known pretty big. I mean, not just in Atlanta. I mean, people from all over the world travel and come to the restaurants. What would you say for somebody that's like, I want to introduce a new category, a new space, a new cuisine? What is those one or two things that are imperative for them to really have a chance of succeeding?
I think it's imperative, first of all, to know exactly who you are and what you are. So whatever that genre is that you pick, you got to pick it and stick with it and know exactly and live by that brand, literally. That's number one. Number two, you got to work your ass off because it's not easy.
Were there times when you started 10 when you thought we're not going to make it?
Oh, many times. Many, many times. We nearly went out of business a few times. Just, you know, I'll give you two examples of when we nearly went out of business. We did a major renovation. Back in 98, it was like the in thing to be in a small bungalow. So we were in the small house and then we kind of outgrew the small house. So we were going to move to a new location. And our landlord at the time said, listen, he's going to do this addition. And one thing led to another. And, you know, we signed a long-term lease and we did this addition. But that edition took 1 year, and we didn't close one day, but it looked like a construction site. And so people thought we were closed, and it nearly put us out of business, literally nearly put us out of business. When we reinvented ourselves and we the new building, you know, so to speak, was open, because we never closed, but when that wall was knocked down that last day and this new space came, because we went from being in a small bungalow to kind of what looks like a modern office building, if you will. Like, a lot of people think it's an office building, but it's not, because it's contemporary looking. That nearly put us out of business. And we had to work really hard to dig our way out of that. And then the other thing was when the economy turned, you know, restaurants suffered, you know, badly. And, you know, we're fortunate because we've always been small, and we've always been very, you know, very, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, very strategic in remaining small and being very frugal when it's necessary. So that got us through. But I mean, there were some tough times for sure.
So when you were going through those times, you know, I feel like a lot of people, especially entrepreneurs, you have to expect up and downs. You have to expect that sometimes shit is going to get pretty critical and you got to make tough decisions. A lot of people in your case would have just thrown in the towel. What was the mental state, or what was your thought process to get you through that? Like, what made you say, we're going to come out on top? Did you ever doubt yourself?
Hey, no, never. I've always been a fighter. I grew up in a family of boxers. I grew up boxing. I played sports, soccer. You know, I only win. I don't ever, you know, when doubt creeps in, I take my mind to another place. I only believe in winning, and I do whatever it takes to win. I'm very competitive, so I would never allow myself to get into that situation. Have I lost before? Hell yeah, I haven't won all of them. I mean, not every single one of my business ventures have been successful by any stretch of the imagination. But that fact, I never, ever, ever cried or pondered or was like, you know, on any of the failures. I woke up the next day and I kept it moving. I never, ever once said, oh, but what if and this and that. I literally have never looked back, and I just keep moving forward every single day. I just keep moving forward. I have a saying, every morning I get up, I put the headgear on, I put the mouth guard in, I put the gloves on, and I go to fight, because every single day something's coming at you, every single day.
So for people that want to be entrepreneurs, own a business, you know, I always hear everybody say, I want to be an entrepreneur. And I'm like, do you really want to be one? I want you to tell people, what does it really take to be an entrepreneur? Because it's not just restaurants. You have other ventures and other things that you get into. What does it really take? Like, if somebody really wants to take a run at this, I don't want to hear all the fluff. And that's what a lot of people always hear, all the wonderful things. Like you said, they see what happens 20 years later. But they don't see the real struggle that goes on. So how would you kind of preface that?
Well, I mean, two words, hard work. You got to really be prepared to work hard. Sacrifice. A lot of people don't want to sacrifice. I had to sacrifice. When I was a soccer player, I didn't have a social life. My friends were all out partying at clubs and stuff. I couldn't. I had a game the next day, I had training. I couldn't go out. I couldn't drink. I couldn't smoke. I couldn't do all those things. Not that I wanted to, but if I did, I couldn't do all that stuff. When my wife was going off to social engagements and weddings and all these things, I couldn't go. I was fortunate enough, she had her own business. She understood what it takes. But sacrifice. I mean, you lose friends, you lose, you know, touch with people. I mean, it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of sacrifice. And you have to really, really grind. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. You have to literally put your head down and work really, really hard. Like, I cannot stress that enough. And I've got a saying, you know, not everyone's meant to be an entrepreneur. I think people need to know where they're at. If you're not going to be an entrepreneur and you're going to work for a company, either way, just do the best and be the best at what you can. They both take hard work. It doesn't mean you can't be successful if you're working for a company. But either way, you're going to have to work hard if you want to get up in that company. And then know your lane and stick in your lane. You know, don't be going into other people's lanes or crossing over and, you know, one foot in the door, one foot out the door. Once you've decided if you're going to be an entrepreneur and you have talent at that, or you're going to work for a company, go with that. Put your head down, work really, really hard, and stay in your lane. And also work smart. I mean, a lot of people don't work smart. You know, working hard and working smart, it takes both.
Yeah. So for outside of your group, outside of True Story Brands, what is a group that is currently in the hospitality space that you think does it well? And it doesn't even have to be restaurants. It could be hotels. It can be, what is a group that you look at and go, that's a smart marketing group. I like what they're doing. So that people could understand outside of yours, other people that are doing it right.
It's interesting. I find... I find inspiration in different things. Not a, you know, if I'm not at one of my restaurants, I'm typically at another restaurant, kind of like just R&D and checking it out. And I love going to places like New York, you know, in LA, and seeing what's going on and you know, seeing what people are doing. But I find a lot of inspiration in fashion as well, and actually in design, like interior design, for example. Like, you know, my wife's always on Pinterest and these kind of things. And like, I've come up with restaurant ideas just from seeing a house, you know, some kind of, you know, image. And I'm like, wow, that, you know, it'll spark something in me about, you know, for example, Cape Dutch. We were in Cape Town in Stellenbosch at Wine Country at Ken Forrester's house. This house is built in 1659. It's this beautiful winery, and we had the most wonderful day with buckets of wine, and we were grilling, brining these steaks and vegetables. And when the wood fire grill space became available, which is now Cape Dutch, I walked in there at the insistence of my wife and my chef Philippe. And when I walked in, I was like, I get it. I'm going to recreate that day in a dining room setting. I'm going to bring the braai into a dining room and make it about community and food and wine, and kind of bring Wine Country of South Africa to Atlanta, so to speak. You know, that came from an afternoon at a house.
Yeah.
You know, so it just depends, you know, in terms of brands themselves. There's so many brands, you know, like I love the consistency of Tom Ford and how he sticks to a very classic look and feel. You know, restaurant group, we spoke about Hillstone, you know, they're very, very influential in terms of consistency and, you know, just what they do across the country.
So as far as design goes, right, how big of a role do you think in restaurants specifically food is versus atmosphere? Because a lot of us have eaten at restaurants that have phenomenal food, but the vibe is off, the service is not great. And then there's restaurants that are just okay, but the vibe and the atmosphere is unbelievable. You'd rather go there. What's the balance?
I think it's all-encompassing now. The balance is literally equal parts. You cannot have a restaurant with just good food anymore. If you want to be really successful, if you want to be noticed. There's still restaurants out there that are like really, really good, but the vibe's not there. People will go for the food, but they're not going to stand out. They're not going to make a killing at it. They'll make a living, but they're not going to make a killing. And I think you need to really stand out and be different. You know, if you look at some of our concepts, each one stands alone. You know, you've got 10 degrees south. It feels like you went on safari. It's got a kind of a high-end safari feel, traditional South African. You've got Yebo Beach House, which kind of transports you to, you know, the coast, if you will, like you're in Cape Town or Malibu or, you know, the Hamptons. You know, it's South African-American fusion small plates. You look at Cape Dutch, it transports you. You could be in Napa Valley. You could be in the south of France, or you could be in Stellenbosch in Wine Country in South Africa. And it's more of a, you know, we concentrate there on the braai and the wood grilled, you know, dishes, and it's more modern South African. And then you look at Biltong Bar, which is South African street food. We specialize in biltong, which is South African beef jerky. You know, it's dry aged beef jerky, if you will. It's air dried as opposed to heat dried. No nitrates, no chemicals, no processing. It's one of the purest forms of protein, beef protein that you can eat. And it's healthy, and it's just a really good product, and it's different. You know, people taste, they're not expecting it. They're expecting that same old, you know, beef jerky that you're used to in America, and it's just different. And then we've got like these cool dishes in that, and it's literally beef jerky and booze, because we've got the craft cocktail component there, you know, with all these wonderful cocktails and stuff like that. So every restaurant sits apart, but they've all got the same theme, but every single one of them transports you to a different place. Food, service, atmosphere, and they all equal parts.
But they all stay true to knowing who you were.
All stay true. So, you know, you hear this going around a lot right now, authentic. And, you know, a lot of people use the word. It's become kind of like a harp word, if you will. But in all honesty, not everyone's authentic to their brand.
Yeah.
The successful ones are really authentic. Right now it's become a harp word and everyone's like, oh, authentic, authentic, authentic. But are you truly authentic? And you have to gut check. You have to check yourself sometimes, like, are you authentic? You know, there'll be South Africans that'll come up to me and they'll be like, oh, your biltong's not the same. And I'm like, not for nothing, but nobody's biltong's the same. That's the beauty about biltong, is that just like beef jerky, everybody makes a difference. And it's authentic to me. It's authentic to, you know, other South Africans. It doesn't mean it's authentic to everybody, but I stay authentic to me and what I consider to be South African. Like, a lot of people that haven't been home in a long time, back to South Africa, come in and they'll be like, well, this doesn't look South African. Well, when last were you there? Because it's a different place than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's changed. It's come a long way. It's more European. It's more cosmopolitan. There's a lot of stuff going on that they might not even know exists. So it might not be the South Africa you knew, but it's the South Africa of now.
And like you said, I mean, the thing is, it's much easier to speak on something and to stand behind something when it's true to who you are. I mean, it's not like you're fabricating. Like you said, you could have easily opened up a pizza spot, a Tex-Mex to make.
Easily.
But it's not true to the vision, to the goal. And I think staying in your lane has also led to your success. You put your head down, naturally put in the work. Like you said, I think people are going to walk away from one thing specifically listening to this is, it takes hard work.
It takes hard work. You know, let's talk about athletes and how to, like, name one athlete. Steph Curry, LeBron James, Tom Brady, Matt Ryan. These guys put in the work, man. They work hard off season, during season. They first at the training facility and they last to leave. They put in the work. The greats put in the work. And it's the same thing with business, man. You have to put in the work. Nothing comes for free. Nothing. You put in the work. I've got a saying, you know, people talk about luck. The harder you work, the luckier you get. And that's a fact. You know, you got to work hard. You have to work hard. You also have to be smart. You have to reinvent. You know, talk about marketing. Yebo Beach House. In the winter, people in Atlanta, like, they don't relate to a beach house. We become a ski house. We literally flip that entire restaurant for 3 months, and it's a ski lodge. We change the menu, we change the wine list. Still South African inspired. Now, there's no snow and skiing in South Africa, but it's a South African American fusion. So we can do that and we can give people the environment that they want with the food that we want to give them. And it works. It just works. You know, Biltong Bar is the first, 10 degrees south, first South African restaurant, invented the category. Cape Dutch, the braai, never been done before in terms of, like, you know, bringing wine country and the braai and the grill concept to America. Yebo Beach House, American South African fusion, and switching from a beach house to a ski house. And then you've got Biltong Bar, which is the first concept of its kind anywhere in the world. You go to South Africa, there's a lot of Biltong stores, there's a lot of bars, but we combined the two to be a Biltong Bar, beef jerky and booze. And that's, you have to be smart. You have to do these kind of things so that people can appreciate it and they can see it's different, because that's what they're also looking for, right? Especially the younger generation, you know, they're looking for things that are different, things that have a story. What's the story?
Being a restaurateur, right? A lot of people want to be restaurateurs. They also don't see, you have these concepts, they're beautifully executed, the food is great, but you're also at all of them, literally 6 days a week, pretty much, jumping from one to the next to the next. How important is it for you to be out and about entertaining, being in front of people versus being behind the scenes? Because in all fairness, you've become the brand. When people talk about True Story, you know, they know the family and they know everybody else, but people know Justin Anthony. Did you always go to become a brand? Did it organically happen? How did you get to the point now where you are synonymous with your products? Because that's the thing that a lot of people hope for, is that people mention your name, your business resonates. Somebody mentions the business, your name resonates.
You know, I say this to people sometimes. I might be a restaurateur, but I'm really in the entertainment business. I love entertaining people. You know, I love hosting and entertaining people. So if I'm in town, if I'm in Atlanta, I will literally be at my restaurants, definitely one of them, but I try and hit all four in a day when they're open. And it's not even six, it's 7 days a week, because some of our restaurants are open 7 days a week.
So, I was giving you a day off, but
No days off.
No days off.
No days off. So, you know, I hit the restaurants, but it's a lifestyle. You know, I think we're more than just a restaurant company. I think we're a lifestyle restaurant company. And that means that, you know, you buy into the lifestyle that we're providing. And part of that lifestyle is me being in the restaurants. You know, if my wife wants to see me, she has her company during the day and she does her stuff. And at night she comes to the restaurants, because that's how we see each other, you know. Because that's where I'll be. You know, I'm not sitting at home and, you know, leaving it to people. I'm at the restaurants and I'm shaking hands and hugging and, you know, just making people feel at home. I think that people like it when they walk into an establishment and they know that somebody's there in charge. They feel comfortable, they feel safe, and, you know, people everybody wants to be a VIP, right?
True.
And it's important that you know, they're spending money with you. Everybody is a VIP. you're going to come spend money with me, I'm going to make you feel like a king because that's what you are.
Do you feel that...
Or queen.
Well, or queen, yes, let's clarify. So, you know, what's interesting is you jump around, you're doing all this. This is a hard lifestyle. I mean, everybody knows being in the restaurant business is probably, I would say, one of the hardest industries to be in. But you love what you do. Do you ever look at it as a job? Or this is literally the reason do you owe it to your success is because you had a love from an early age of sports and you talked about how team is number one for you. I would relate that back to playing on a soccer team, right? You have 11 people, you have to entrust in each other. Growing up in a community home, entertaining. When you look at it in the bigger picture, all these little, you know, points throughout your life, I feel have almost combined to create what you have now. And you never really felt like you were working because you were really loving what you were doing versus people that sometimes, like you said, it's not about the money always. If it was about the money, you may have been successful but miserable or vice versa. In this case, you've been both. You're having a good time and you're successful at doing it.
I mean, I've said this, I don't know how many times to people. There's a lot easier ways to make money, a lot of money, than restaurants. It's hard, you know, it's a grind. I love what I do. I've thought about getting out many, many times. And I tried to get out at one point. I was like, I'm done. And I was burnt out. I was like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And it's like the vortex. When it's in your blood, it sucks you back in. It just literally sucks you back in. It's like, and it's in my blood now. I don't think, you know, I've said this before. If I caught the lotto tomorrow, I would still own restaurants. It's been the best for me personally. It's been one of the best networking tools for myself. I've met some crazy great people, successful entrepreneurs. I've just met some really cool people through the restaurants, and I continue to meet cool people that I would otherwise never have had a chance to meet, you know, whether it be celebrities or businessmen or whatever the case may be, just regular people as well. So, you know, it is a lifestyle, and it is it's something that I really enjoy and that I really love and I'm passionate about. But I also have a mission because I'm trying to, you know, for 20 years I've been fighting the South African fight. I want people to, you know, to become passionate about what I'm passionate about because I know how good it is, you know, and I think I have fairly decent taste when it comes to things in general, whether it be cars, watches, fashion. I think food and wine go hand in hand with, you know, that kind of lifestyle. And I would, you know, I just want people to realize that it's a really, really good cuisine.
If you had to pick one dish from all the restaurants, what would be your one dish?
My mom's chicken curry. Chicken curry at 10 degrees south. It's the one dish that hits all the senses. It's kind of like, it's like that first time you had Pop Rocks in your mouth and like it just phenomenal. Explodes. I mean, you've got chicken curry, which is a yellow curry. It's an Indian-based curry, but it's yellow. We throw some dehydrated coconut, chopped bananas, chopped onion tomato, and South African chutney called Mrs. Ball's chutney. It's a peach chutney. And you combine and you mix everything together, and it's just, it's sweet and savory, and I mean, there's just a lot going on, and it's just, it's an unbelievable dish.
Favorite wine?
So it's interesting. Most of our wine lists are split between South Africa and America.
Yeah.
You know, specifically Napa. Those are the two areas that I'm passionate about, and it kind of makes sense for who I am, right? Born and raised in South Africa, I've been in America as long, you know, so you've got Napa Valley, which is the key, and you've got Stellenbosch and those areas, which are the key wine regions in South Africa. I would say that right now, my favorite South African wine is white, is the FMC. Ken Forrester makes this wine, and, you know, FMC, it's a Chenin Blanc. A lot of people don't go to Chenin Blanc as their first wine, but it's actually the perfect balance. If you're not sure if you want a Sauvignon Blanc or a Chardonnay, Chenin Blanc fits right in the middle of that. It's like, it can go either way. It's food friendly. You can drink it on its own. And FMC, you know, it's what the letters stand for, fucking marvelous Chenin. And that's exactly what it is.
Is that really what it stands for?
Yeah. So it's an unbelievable wine. And it's my favorite white wine out of South Africa. My favorite red out of South Africa right now is probably Daturin Fusion 5, which is a blend. It's a Bordeaux blend. South African wines are old world meets new world. So you're getting like that old world French style, but then it also finishes like an American. And then on the American front, you know, I'm fortunate that, you know, I owned a wine company, which I just sold, called King of Clubs. And so it was a Napa cult wine. And, you know, we developed it took us a long time, and it was a phenomenal project. I had so much fun doing it, and we competed with the Screaming Eagles. We still do, but it was a phenomenal project. I learned a lot about Napa Valley, a lot about wine. I thought I knew a lot about wine from being in the restaurant business, but I actually learned a lot more. But an opportunity presented itself, and I sold that company, and it's still my favorite red out of probably in the world, to be honest with you. And one thing about me, I'm never biased when it comes to food and wine. I think if you're going to be a successful restaurateur, you can never be biased. You have to be objective. When I taste wines, which I do every week, I don't taste for my own palates. I taste for the customer's palate, because everyone's wine is very subjective. It's not objective. What you like, I might not like, and vice versa. You know, it's very, very subjective thing. So I taste accordingly, and I cross the spectrum. So I'm never biased. If somebody does something better than us, I'm the first to give them kudos and, you know, congratulate them. I'm never biased. But yeah, King of Clubs is my favorite red wine. And then my favorite white wine right now out of Napa Valley would probably be the Jason Pallmeyer Chardonnay.
Nice. So what's next for True Story Brands? You got a lot going on, 4 booming restaurants, ventures going on all the time. What's next? What's the vision? What's the goal?
So we're going to be expanding our biltong concept, the beef jerky concept. A couple things. We built a USDA facility in Birmingham, Alabama, where we are now able to produce large quantities of our biltong, and it's USDA, so we can ship across state lines. We can package it, we can sell it in stores, etc.
And that's a very difficult thing to receive as well, right? To get approved for USDA. In
yeah, yeah. It took us a year. I mean, it's not easy. It's a hard process. It's very hard. This recipe has been passed down through generations. You know, it's my father's recipe. He's been making it for the restaurants for many years. And so now to be able to give that to mass markets, you know, through whether it be Amazon Prime or Costco or whatever, you know, we're able to do, we're able to package it and sell it that way. And then we're going to do brick and mortar stores as well. So we'll open New York next year, Nomad area, Broadway, across from the new Virgin Hotel. It's a hot and upcoming area. And we're going to open up a biltong bar there. And I kind of want to become the Starbucks of beef jerky, if you will. Brick and mortar, like I want people to resonate with what biltong bar is, in terms of like, I want it to be like brick and mortar, and I want to, you know, have product in stores as well.
Did you ever think that South African cuisine would come this far 20 years later?
No, to be honest, it's taken longer than I thought. I never thought it would come. I did think it would come this far, but I think it's taken a little longer than I thought. I'm very impatient.
Yeah.
Like, I want something and I want it now.
Yeah.
And I think most entrepreneurs are like that. And I had to learn patience. You know, it's 20 years in the making, this. But at the end of the day, you know, I think that biltong itself is a great avenue to be able to get the South African word out there. Everybody loves beef jerky if you eat beef, right? Like, most people like beef jerky. So it's something that people, like Americans, can understand without getting scared.
You're going to become the new kale.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, this whole paleo thing helps us.
Yeah.
All these things help us.
So to walk away today for somebody that's listening, whether it be hospitality or just business in general, what is the one thing that, if people are going to take away one lesson, that you want them to really resonate with, that is going to make them successful?
Number one, be a team player. I think that, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs get their head stuck up their own asses, and, you know, they think it's all about them, and egos come into play, and narcissism and all these things. I think you need to know that it takes a village. I think you need to, you know, realize that, be a good leader. I think that, you know, you need to give, I'm a big believer in giving youth a chance. You know, I've got, you know, my right hand director of operations, Jamie Genovese. She started out as a server with us. You know, server, bartender, assistant manager, then a manager. Like, she was young. I mean, she was like 22, 23 years old. And when she became the general manager, you know, of one of my restaurants, and didn't have the experience, but she had the drive. She had the creativity. She had the drive to be able to make a success. And she's just grown leaps and bounds. And, you know, there, a lot of people wouldn't have given that chance, I don't think. You know, I think that, you know, and she took it and she ran with it. And I think that you need to give youth a chance. A lot of people are scared of that. But I think you have to be a team player, and it's just like sports. You know, it's like owning a restaurant's not like, you know, it's interesting. Like, I had a conversation with Claude Holman, the golf coach, last week, and he was saying, you know, golf is a very selfish sport. They're out there as individuals. They don't know about a team. It's all on them. It's an individual sport. You know, they can rock up whenever they want. They can miss training if they want. It's individual. When you're in a team sport or you're in a business and you have employees, you got to show up. You know, I don't care if your dog ran away, your girlfriend left you, your boyfriend left you, you're sick. You show up with a smile on your face and you put that behind you. It's like showing up on stage every single night. You know, you go to Broadway, you don't know whether that person's got a personal problem. They're on stage. And you're on stage every single day, especially in the restaurant business. So you have to put your best foot forward every single day and make sure your team's doing the same thing. And, you know, make sure that people are playing to their strengths and that you know what their strengths and weaknesses are. You're not putting them in bad situations.
So I think that's amazing takeaways for a lot of people to listen to. So for those that want to get in touch with you, follow you, shout out your social media, your website, how can people get in touch?
So social media, Facebook, I'm just Justin Anthony. Obviously Atlanta. If you see my picture, I'm bald. In fact, my profile picture you took.
I did.
I was hungover in Mykonos, looking down an alleyway, literally thinking, am I going to make it out of Mykonos alive? That's how hungover I was. And Justin snapped a picture of me and it looks like I'm posing, but I'm really not.
He really wasn't posing. I just want to verify that. So yeah. If anybody thought that was a stage shot, that was me snapping him as he looked like he was dying.
I was literally trying to survive at that point. Instagram and Twitter is at JustinAnthony10, the number 10. And
And
our website's truestorybrands.com. And then you've got, you know, you can access all the restaurants through that, you know, through that website.
Perfect. So I want to thank you for coming on today. My cousin.
Thank you for having me. It was a very serious interview that I feel like it was very, I haven't been that serious for a long time.
Can I tell you what I like about doing this? And this is my favorite part of this podcast. I don't care about anything for me. I want to become a fan of people. Even with friends of mine, I learn things and we speak in settings that we typically wouldn't, right?
Yeah.
So to me, I'm appreciative that you did this. I learned a lot today. I'm motivated, man. I mean, having an agency, it makes me reshift my mindset in some regards in that team atmosphere. So I feel not only myself, but others will look at this and say, you know what? I can take, even if it's one nugget from this, it can change somebody. It can motivate somebody, get somebody out of a rut. So, you know, I think amazing, man. Appreciate you.
I think it's always important to give back, and I hope somebody learns something out of it. But, you know, in all honesty, I'm not normally that serious.
He's not. I put him on best behavior today. Even I'm not this serious typically, but appreciate everybody listening.
I think I even got through without swearing. I think I swore once.
By the way, this is a first. There's a lot of firsts today on this episode. So
there we go.
All right, cuz. Appreciate
you, man.
Thanks
for having me,
man. Once again, I'm your host, Justin Epstein, and thank you for listening to Culturation. As always, this show has been powered by Premiere.